Hi, and welcome to Failureology, a podcast about engineering failures. I'm your host, Nicole.
And I'm Brian, and we're both from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Welcome to our 35th mini failure episode.
We're bringing you engineering failures in bite-sized pieces.
Make no mistake, though, these are still significant failures, but they either have pretty straightforward causes or not enough information for a full episode of Failureology.
These episodes are also just the failure, no news, and no ads. For now, at least.
It's pretty much like Failureology Lite.
This week's mini-failure is about what was supposed to be the Hard Rock Hotel in New Orleans. Located at 1031 Canal Street in the Central Business District of New Orleans, the 18-story, 58-meter-tall, or 190-feet-tall structure under construction partially collapsed in 2019. The collapse happened 8 days after the last batch of concrete was poured on the roof. From the 1930s to the late 90s, the site was home to a Woolworth store, who was ultimately bought by Foot Locker. The store was demolished in 2016 to make way for a tower that was intended to include 350 hotel rooms, 65 condos, a restaurant, 1,100 square meters of event space, and a 400-car garage. And let me tell you, at only 18 stories tall, 350 hotel rooms and 65 condos is a pretty decent-sized building. Most buildings have 10 units per floor. So hotel rooms are a lot smaller because they don't have a kitchen and they're, you know, it's kind of like a really small studio apartment without a kitchen, but that's still a lot of units. On October 12th, 2019, at 9:12 a.m., while still under construction, as I mentioned, the side of the building facing north towards North Rampart Street collapsed when the concrete and steel pancaked, and unfortunately, 3 workers died and 18 others were injured in that collapse.
So the cause of this collapse is still under investigation, hence why this is a mini failure. There just isn't enough information to do a full episode of Failureology yet. In April 2020, Occupational Safety and Health Administration cited the structural engineering firm, general contractor, steel erector, and other subcontractors for issues related to the collapse. They also found that the structural engineer of record had, quote, failed to adequately design, review, or approve steel bolt connections affecting the structural integrity of the building. The engineer is appealing the findings and correspondingly denies any wrongdoing in this case. OSHA also cited the general contractor for violations related to inadequate egress of the structure. They cited the steel erector for failing to maintain structural stability of the building, and cited the other subcontractors for violations related to the emergency egress training, inadequate egress, fall hazard training, and safety hazards. The collective fines for all groups involved were $315,536. So it sounds like there were quite a few issues specifically around safety on the site.
I also just want to add that these are not our claims. These are claims that we read on a OSHA or Occupational Safety and Health Administration report. We have not seen the drawings. I'm not qualified to make any of these claims. We are just reiterating the claims that were made. And this is still under investigation. So the fines have been handed out, but the recipients have the ability to counter those. And so that process is still going. And I imagine this is going to be tied up in legal stuff for several more years, and we may never know exactly what happened, especially if this gets closed in some type of settlement. So I just wanted to reiterate that.
In addition to all the fines that were levied, injured workers, neighboring property owners, and the developers of the project are suing the engineers, contractors, and consultants that formed the construction team. Roughly 70 lawsuits were filed. I know America's fairly litigation happy. A lot of people like to sue people in the States. 70 lawsuits, though, still seems like a pretty good number of lawsuits for something like this. I'm not saying whether it's justified or not. 70 just seems like a decent number of lawsuits. It's like 70 more than you should really want on your projects.
The thing here, though, is that someone or some people lost a lot of money because of the fines, because of the development, Well, the developer lost what they'd already paid for to be built and the fact that the development had to be torn down and restarted. So someone lost a lot of money. And so I'm not surprised that there are lawsuits. The 70 to me suggests what I like to call the shotgun blast, where everyone sues everyone and sees what sticks. hoping that they can reclaim some of what they lost. And so I'm not overly surprised.
The New Orleans Office of Inspector General also recommended three former building inspectors be charged with felonies related to the collapse. The investigation found that they failed to appear in person on site to inspect decking and rebar before the slabs were poured on the upper floor, fudged inspection reports, and only reviewed photos taken by the construction team. Some of the workers on site had complained about unsafe practices before the collapse of the structure occurred. One even posted a video of what he said was insufficient support for the structure.
A California-based structural engineer reviewed the collapse records on behalf of a news outlet. They note him as an independent engineer and formal municipal plans reviewer. And again, we're repeating his comments that were published by this news outlet. But they noted that the collapse was likely not caused by one singular item, but a combination of factors, which is something we see all the time in these failures. It's never just one thing. It's several things adding up together to create these catastrophic events. What he noted was that there was a change to the metal decking, or Q-deck, that makes up these pans. So the floor plate is created by these Q-deck pans, and then the concrete is poured on top of them, and that's what forms the floor slab. And this is an alternate method to using a wood form, where the wood is placed. We call them tables. They go in place. The concrete is poured, and then once it's cured to a whatever the level that it's required to cure to, the wood forms get moved away. But the metal decking, in this case, the Q-deck, stays in place as part of the floor assembly. And this California-based structural engineer noted that there was a change to the performance ratings or characteristics of the metal Q-decking. There seemed to be some back and forth in the records between the project managers, steel erectors, and engineers on the gauge of this metal decking. So the specified gauge was suitable for the column spacing, and while a lighter gauge could work, the columns had to move closer together to a shorter span to make that happen. And so the design of the columns was based on this specific gauge or thickness of the metal decking, and if they wanted to make that gauge thinner or the metal decking thinner, they had to adjust the column spacing. And it appears that the decking was changed, but the columns weren't adjusted. And the city of New Orleans claims they didn't receive those revisions. And for what it's worth, especially in a hotel, column changes would have had a huge impact on so many building elements like walls, suite layouts, plumbing. It would have been a cascading effect. I doubt anyone would have accepted it. And so it's surprising that it got this far and that they used the different gauge. It's also surprising that this building got to the last pour. So it wasn't until they poured the top floor that this failure happened, but it sounds like that gauge was used throughout the building. So I'm kind of surprised it lasted as long as it did. There was a cantilever balcony section on the north side of the building, the section that collapsed, and the California engineer thought there should have been steel rebar in this balcony concrete, but it was not part of the design plans. There were metal plates on the edges of the steel decking that were too high due to out-of-plumb columns, and it doesn't appear that the out-of-plumb columns were questioned or reviewed. And that just means that the columns weren't straight and level like they were supposed to be. They're kind of crooked or maybe not completely square, and they don't support the right amount of weight. The column's main job is to transport load from the floor above to the floor below. And that's why the columns are usually stacked, because it transfers that load all the way to the foundation of the building. And if you want to offset the column, you have to install some type of beam or some other structural element to offset that load from above down to below. I'm not a structural engineer, but this is my understanding. And so if the columns are not constructed properly, they don't transfer the right amount of weight. Their capacity is reduced and they create weak spots in the structure. The investigation also uncovered that the city of New Orleans didn't challenge the structural design of the steel-framed upper floors, despite having questioned the mechanical, electrical, and foundation plans. And for the record, there's generally different groups of specialists that review each discipline. So in Calgary, for example, there's a group of mechanical plans examiners that review mechanical plans, and there's another group that does electrical and structural and so on. And so usually there's specialists or people with either specialty experience or training that's responsible for reviewing different disciplines. in my experience, the municipality does not do peer reviews of the building when there is a registered engineer stamping. So it doesn't seem normal that they would necessarily question the design of the structure. They would just be reviewing it for code compliance. And I have no idea what the codes look like in Louisiana. I've never worked there. Fun fact that's completely unrelated to the collapse, but I found an article from February 2018 that said the hotel was supposed to open in 2019, but if they just topped out the tower in October of 2019, there's no way they would have been complete until at least April 2020, and that's just a rough guesstimate. So I'm guessing they ran into other issues on site that would have caused them delays of at least 4 months. Typically, once you've topped out a tower, it takes 6 to 8 months to complete the windows and all the interior finishes and have occupancy. So October 2019 would have been, they would have pushed occupancy late. So I'm not sure what any of those other issues were. I just thought that was interesting that there was clearly some type of delay on the project.
So in addition, there was some additional drama surrounding the demolition of the building itself. So in January 2020, there was a petition to demolish three neighboring historic buildings due to safety concerns related to the tower demolition. In addition, it appears that the city of New Orleans wanted an implosion using explosives and without proper insurance, and the developer wanted a traditional demolition. This went on for several months, back and forth, and the developer was forced to gain approval for traditional demolition in court. The building was finally demolished in December of 2020.
So based on the fact that there were inspectors potentially not going to site and fudging inspection reports, and the fact that, from what we can tell, New Orleans wanted to use an implosion method that was unsafe, not insured, and dangerous, I have some questions about what's going on down there. But it's a long shot that you're listening, but Mr. Developer and Contractor, if you are listening, thank you for fighting in court to get a safe demolition method. Some people would have just said, fine, Mr. Client, we'll do what you want, even though it's wrong. And that's not good. We need people to push back. So thank you.
So there you have it. The Hard Rock Hotel in New Orleans. Despite the actual cause of the collapse, which we may never know about, depending on how the legal cases play out, it appears that there were several hands caught in the proverbial cookie jar.
Thanks for listening to this mini failure episode. For our regular episodes, check out Failurology wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to chat with us, our Twitter handle is @Failurology. You can email us at thefailurologypodcast@gmail.com. You can connect with us on LinkedIn, or you can message us right in the Patreon app. And there's links to all of these in the show notes. Bye, everyone. Talk soon.